with Jesus sitting in the boat, shaking his head at the disciples' denseness in not being able to understand what is possible by faith and what that means about who Jesus is. And I'll pick it up with the very last line that Jesus had at the end of that episode and continue from there. You don't understand yet. They came to Bethsaida, and people brought a blind man to Jesus and pleaded with him that he might lay his hands on him. And taking the hand of the blind man, he led him outside the village. And he spit onto his eyes. And he laid his hands on him and he said, "Do you see anything?" And looking up, he said, "I see people, but they look like trees walking around." So again, Jesus laid his hands on him. And the man looked intently. Then was made new and saw everything clearly. Jesus said to him, "Don't even enter into the village." Now Jesus and his disciples were going out to the villages around Caesarea Philippi, and on the way he asked them, "Who do people say I am?" They told him, "John the Baptist. Others say Elijah, others one of the prophets." But Jesus said, "But you, who do you say I am?" Rock spoke up and said, "You are the Anointed One." And he rebuked them to tell nobody about him. And then he began to teach them. It's necessary for the Son of Humanity to suffer greatly, be rejected by the elders, the high priests, and the legal experts, be put to death, and after 3 days, rise. Spoke this word plainly. And Rock took him aside and began to rebuke him. And Jesus, turning and looking at his disciples, rebuked Rock and said, "Get behind me, Satan, for you're not thinking what God wants, but what people want." And he summoned the whole crowd with his disciples, and he said to them, "If anyone wants to come after me, let them deny themselves, take up their crosses, and follow after me. For whoever want to save their lives will lose them. But whoever will lose their lives for me and the good news will save them. For what does it benefit people to acquire the whole world and forfeit their lives? For what can people give in exchange for their lives? For whoever are ashamed of me in this adulterous and sinful generation, also the Son of Man will be ashamed of them when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels. And I swear to you, there are some standing here who will not taste of death before they have seen the rule of God come in power." After 6 days, he took along Rock, James, and John and went up onto a high mountain privately by themselves. And he was transformed before them. His clothes became dazzlingly, intensely white, like no longer on earth is able to whiten. Elijah appeared with Moses, and they were talking with Jesus. Rock spoke up and said, "Rabbi, it's good we're here. We should make 3 shelters, one for you and one for Moses and one for Elijah." For he didn't know what to say, for they were so frightened. Suddenly a cloud came overshadowing them, and there was a voice from the cloud. "This one Listen to him. Suddenly, when they looked around, they no longer saw anyone except Jesus alone. And as they were coming down from the mountain, Jesus was ordering them to recount to no one what they had seen until after the Son of Man had risen from the dead. Well, they seized on this last word, arguing among themselves what risen from the dead meant. So they asked him, how do the legal experts say that it's necessary for Elijah to come first? Jesus said to them, if Elijah is to come first in order to put everything right, then how is it written about the Son of Humanity that he is to suffer greatly and be scorned? On the contrary, I'm telling you, Elijah already came, and they did to him whatever they wanted to, just as it's written about him. When they came to the other disciples, they saw a huge crowd and lawyers arguing with them. Upon seeing him, the whole crowd became alarmed and began running up, greeting him. Jesus said to them, well, what were you arguing about with them? And someone from the crowd said, teacher, I brought my son to you because he is a mute and deaf spirit. Wherever it seizes him, it hurls him down. He writhes about on the ground, foams at the mouth, grinds his teeth, then withers up. I asked your disciples to drive it out, but they weren't strong enough. Jesus said to them, oh, faithless generation, how long am I to be with you? How long am I to put up with you? Bring him to me. Well, they brought the boy to Jesus, and upon seeing him, the spirit hurled him down, and he was writhing about on the ground, foaming at the mouth. Jesus asked the father of the boy, how long has it been happening like this with him? And the father said, oh, from childhood, often it's thrown him even into fire and into water in order to destroy him. But if you're able to do anything, have compassion on us, help us. And Jesus said to the father of the boy, if you're able, everything is possible to one who has faith. Immediately the father of the boy screamed, saying, I have faith, help my lack of faith. And Jesus, seeing a crowd running together, immediately rebuked the unclean spirit, saying to it, mute and deaf spirit, now I am ordering you, get out of him and don't ever enter into him again. And the unclean spirit, shaking the boy and screaming, came out of him. But the boy became so like a dead person that people were saying, he died. But Jesus grasped his hand. And raised him up. And he got up. When they were in the house again, his disciples were asking him about this. Why weren't we able to drive it out? Jesus said to them, it isn't possible for anyone to drive out this kind except by prayer. Now they were passing through Galilee. And Jesus did not want anyone to know it because he was teaching his disciples and he was saying to them, the Son of Humanity will be handed over into human hands. And they will put him 3 days after being put to death, he'll rise. But they did not understand what he said. And they were afraid to ask him. They came to Capernaum, and when they were in the house, Jesus asked them, what were you arguing about on the way? But they kept quiet because on the way they had been arguing among themselves who was greatest. So Jesus sat down, summoned the 12, and said to them, if anyone among you wants to be great, great, he is to be least of all and everybody's servant. And he took a little child, stood it in their midst, put his arms around it, and said to them, whoever receives one such child in my name receives me. And whoever receives me receives not me, but the one who sent me. John said, teacher, we saw someone driving out demons in your name, and we stopped him because he wasn't following us. Jesus said to them, don't stop him. For there's no one who will do a work of power by my name and very quickly after be able to pronounce misfortune on me. For whoever isn't against us is for us. For whoever gives you a cup of water based on a name, because you're under the anointed one, I swear to you that she definitely won't lose her reward. But whoever causes one of these little ones who have faith to stumble, it would be better for them if a large millstone were tied around their neck and they were thrown into the sea. Look, if your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. It's better for you to enter into life maimed than with two hands to be thrown into Gehenna, to the inextinguishable fire. And if your foot causes you to stumble, cut it off. It's better for you to enter into life lame than with two feet to be thrown into Gehenna. And if your eye causes you to sin, pull it out. It's better for you to enter into the rule of God one-eyed than with two eyes to be thrown into Gehenna, where their maggots don't die and their fire isn't extinguished. Well, everyone will be salted with fire. Salt is good. But if salt becomes no longer able to preserve, how will you restore it? Have salt among yourselves. And be at peace with each other. Arising from there, he went to the territory of Judea and across the Jordan. Again, crowds gathered, and again, as was his custom, he was teaching them. And Pharisees approached, and in order to test him, asked him if it were legal for a husband to divorce his wife. Jesus asked them, what did Moses order you? They said, Moses told him to write a certificate of divorce and divorce her. Jesus said to them, because of your callous minds, he wrote that ordinance. But from the beginning of creation, God made them male and female. For this reason, a man leaves his father and mother, and the two become one flesh, so that they are no longer two, but one flesh. So what God has yoked together, nobody is to separate. When they were in the house again, his disciples were asking him about this, and he said to them, whoever divorces his wife and marries another is guilty of adultery against her. And if that woman, having divorced, marries, she is guilty of adultery. Now, people were bringing little children to him so he might bless them. And the disciples were rebuking them. When Jesus saw this, he got angry and said to them, let the little children come to me. Don't stop them, for the rule of God belongs to such as these. I swear to you that whoever does not receive the rule of God like a little child definitely won't enter into it. And he took them in his arms and put his hands on them and was blessing them profusely. And as he was setting out on his way, a man ran up to him, knelt before him and asked him, good teacher, what am I to do to inherit eternal life? Jesus said to him, why call me good? Nobody is good except the one God. You know the ordinances. Don't murder. Don't commit adultery. Don't steal. Don't defraud. Don't testify falsely. Honor your father and mother. The man said to him, teacher, all these I've kept from my youth. And Jesus looked at him intently and loved him. Then said to him, You lack one thing. Go, sell whatever you have and give to the poor. You'll have a fortune in heaven. Then come, follow me. But at this word, the man became dejected and went off sad because he had a lot of property. Jesus said to his disciples, "How hard it is for those who have possessions to enter into the rule of God." And they were amazed by his words. Again, he said to them, "Children, how hard it is to enter into the rule of God. It's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a wealthy man to enter into the rule of God." And they were completely stunned by his words, saying among themselves, "And who can be saved?" Jesus looked at them intently and said, "With people it's not impossible. With God everything is possible." Rock spoke up and said, "Teacher, look, we left everything and have followed you." And Jesus said to them, "And I swear to you that there is nobody who has left a house or brothers or sisters or a mother or father or children for me and the good news, who will not receive 100 times as many now in this time, houses and brothers, sisters and mothers and children, and fields with persecutions, and in the age to come, eternal life. However, many who are most important now will be least, and the least will be most important." Now he was going up to Jerusalem. He was going ahead of them, and those who were following him were afraid. And again he took the 12 aside and began to tell them the things which were about to happen to him. And he said, "Look, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Humanity will be handed over to the high priests and the legal experts and the elders. And they will condemn him to death and hand him over to Gentiles, who will mock him, spit on him, flog him, then put him to death. And after 3 days, he'll rise." James and John approached him and said, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." Jesus said to them, "What do you want me to do for you?" They said, "Give us a place to sit, one on your right and one on your left in your glory." Jesus said to them, "You don't know what you're asking for. Are you able to drink the cup that I am about to drink? Are you able to be baptized by the baptism by which I am about to be baptized?" They said,
"We're able."
He said, "The cup I drink, you will drink. And by the baptism by which I am to be baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit on my right and left is not mine to give. Instead, it's for those for whom it's been prepared." Well, when the other 10 heard, they got angry at James and John. So Jesus summoned the 12 and said to them, "You know that those who rule the Gentiles lord over them, and their great ones exert authority over them. But it is not to be like this among you. Instead, whoever wants to be great among you is to be your servant. Whoever wants to be most important is to be everybody's slave. Even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and give his life a ransom for many." They came to Jericho, and as he was coming out from Jericho with his disciples and a sizable crowd, a blind man, Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, was sitting beside the way, begging. When he heard that it was Jesus the Nazarene, he screamed out, saying, "Jesus, Son of David, pity me!" Many were rebuking him to be quiet, but he screamed all the louder, "Son of David, pity me!" Jesus stopped and said, "Summon him." And they summoned the blind man, saying to him, "Rise, take courage, he's calling you." And he jumped up, threw off his cloak, and came to Jesus. Jesus asked him, "What do you want me to do for you?" He said, "My rabbi, see again." And Jesus said to him, "Your faith has restored you. Go on off." And immediately he saw again, and he began following Jesus on the way. Please talk with each other.
I was in Israel, and when you read that part about the millstones, I'll never forget being in Capernaum and seeing those gigantic stones. And all the years that I've heard that, until I saw one of those gigantic, huge brown stones, they just lie all over the place in Capernaum.
Tied around one's neck and thrown into the sea. It's a pretty hard
metaphor.
Do the job. Do the job. Definitely do the job. Good. Yes, ma'am.
Today's reading, Jesus definitely, you're definitely portrayed Jesus. He's knows who he is, where he's going, and when.
Yeah.
Or maybe not exactly when. But from the previous, it seemed to me Jesus was struggling also. Is that right? Did I hear that right?
You mean he was struggling in the previous and he's not here, or he's also struggling here?
Identifying himself just... Sometime he had to learn that he was, as a child, how much did he know, and how did he come to this point where he is right now?
Well, I can only suggest what I've mentioned earlier, that was portrayed as Jesus is portrayed as a realistic character, say, limited to Mark, as Mark portrays it. And that is that he would know the scriptures very well. And he would know when these words were spoken to him at baptism, where those words paint a picture of what his role is to be in a general sense. The words at the baptism are from both the enthronement psalm and from the servant song of the suffering servant in Isaiah, which would be a clue to begin with. Furthermore, he would know, as he seems to know about Elijah, that certain passages suggested even Elijah would suffer. So a lot of it is that he knows the scriptures, and he interprets them a particular way, of course, different from what other people might interpret them, but that's how he interprets and understands them. And then as it progresses, it's clear that he's struggling with his limitations, with the hardness of the opposition coming to him, with the fact that John the Baptist is executed. You can see him becoming more and more aware of the imminence of what this will be and what it will be like. And by the time he is, they have discovered that he's the Messiah, he knows he's going to Jerusalem, to the capital city. And he knows what will happen. He can see that ahead. So in some ways, I don't want to be reductionist of the character, because in some ways he knows himself by scriptures, in some ways he knows himself by the events that are happening and the impending thing, in some ways he has prophetic insight. I think that's all in there. Yes, ma'am.
When you were talking about the demon, and the disciples came and asked Jesus why they couldn't get rid of the demon, he said, with this kind of a demon, prayer is required.
Yes.
But he said before that, unbelieving people, if you have faith, you can do anything. But
yes,
it does take more than faith then.
No. In the Gospel of Mark, prayer is the prayer of faith. Later, when Jesus curses a fig tree, and I can anticipate a lot of these things because they're on Saturday, there will not be commentary. I'll do the rest of the gospel on Saturday morning at 8:30 for about 40 minutes. But in this last section, when he curses the fig tree, he says to them, "Have faith in God, and I swear to you that whoever says to this mountain, be taken up and thrown into the sea, and does not doubt in his mind, but has faith that what he says will happen, it will be so for him. So I'm telling you, whatever you ask for and pray for, have faith that you have gotten it, and it will be so for you." So I think what the prayer indicated there was that if they had prayed or been praying, it would have been that they would have had greater access to the power and authority of God. And the prayer would have been an expression of their faith and would have enabled them to drive out that demon.
Was that a prayer from Jesus when Jesus was asked? Do you think when he said, I don't know what constitutes prayer.
Yes.
I guess at the time.
Prayer is related to what God's will is and what is available by faith from God in the Gospel of Mark.
So just saying driving the devil out was a prayer in itself?
Well, driving the devil wouldn't have been a prayer, but it would have been an act of faith because you would have been trusting that when you said it, it would have happened. And prayer would have been a means by which the person might have had been a greater expression of faith and had greater access to the power of God that would enable them to do that. That's how I'm understanding faith and prayer in Mark. Did you want to say more about
just
that?
Just one thing. It says this kind out.
Yeah, it means it's a particularly hard kind to drive out, so you have to have greater power from God, and therefore it requires greater faith. And prayer is the means by which that greater faith comes. You remember earlier when Jesus drove out the legion, he first of all said, get out of him, and nothing happened. And he had to ask the person's name, and he got the name legion, and then he got power over him. So that was a difficult one also.
Just the maturing process too, the disciples, because he's teaching them all along the way. And that's why he says keep quiet, because he knew that they hadn't reached the maturity that they needed to reach at that point. The word got out, the persecution would occur earlier.
Yes, particularly for Jesus, because the fact that he's the Messiah is what he was indicted on, so he needs to keep that a secret.
The disciples weren't ready at that
right.
point.
Right, okay. Yes.
You translated an expression that we have as the translation hardness of heart, because of the hardness of your heart. You translated that callous mind.
Yes, hardening of the minds. Yes, in the ancient world, the heart was the place where they thought. Now that's real interesting. You imagine, try to reimagine yourself as this is the place where you think. You don't think from your brain, you think from here. That's real interesting. Now, the reason I say mind is because the focus is on what you understand, not so much on your feelings. And our tendency, calloused hearts, is to tend toward thinking that the main reason the person wouldn't respond is because they didn't have compassion, which is part of it. But the main focus is on understanding. And so I've translated mind in order to get that. But as I, in my performance earlier at one time, I was saying in their minds, and somebody came up to me afterwards and said, if you're first century in error, you got that wrong. And of course, I knew that. Else we'll see. When Mark tells the story, he does not know if other people will see that in this dying man, humiliated, misunderstood, abandoned by his friends, ridiculed by the society, experiencing pain and death, that is God's idea of what greatness is. And that portrayal is given. Jesus suffers, not so the rest of us won't suffer. Jesus suffers so that the rest of us will be liberated to suffer for the world too. It's 10 o'clock.